Welcome in, everyone. I'm Gerard Romalo, and this is The Vegas Verdict. Here we take a look at local and national issues of interest. We offer a legal perspective whenever possible, and ultimately, we hand down a verdict. Today, we are taking a look at the recent decision by the Supreme Court affecting presidential immunity. This is a very interesting subject that we're going to be talking about for a long time, I'm sure. We have two esteemed guests with us today, including Paul Pata of Paul Pata Law. And Paul, you started your legal career in Washington, D.C., so this is a subject I'm sure you're very interested in.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Gerard. Yes, I did start my career in D.C. I was with the what's called the Maine Department of Justice, the headquarters. That's where I started my career out of law school, and then I moved over to the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., spent a number of years there, almost a decade in Washington as a federal government attorney before coming out here to Las Vegas and joining the U.S. Attorney's Office, and spent about 6 years there and then started my own law firm. But I know today's topic is very interesting and definitely something that I dealt with in D.C., especially where there was a lot of challenges to government agencies' administrative decisions.
All fascinating. We're going to be getting into it in just a moment, but we also have another esteemed guest with us, Dr. David Orenlicher. Hopefully I'm pronouncing it. I know you go by Dr. O at UNLV, but we're so glad to have you here. And your areas of expertise are health law and also constitutional law. And I just want to mention you have your doctorate from Harvard School of Law. So congratulations.
And thank you.
We're very glad to have both of you here today. We're going to jump into this subject of presidential immunity. First, what I'd like to do is have us watch this short video clip, kind of encapsulates the decision that was made, some of the news coverage, and a little bit of reaction from the general public. So let's go ahead and take a look.
We're coming on the air with breaking news from the Supreme Court, where the justices have just ruled on whether former President Donald Trump has absolute or qualified immunity.
In a 6-3 decision from the Supreme Court, the justices issuing a hybrid ruling on the case of presidential immunity.
We know this is a 6-3 ruling written by the Chief Justice that says flatly presidents are immune, absolutely immune for their official acts.
This effectively grants Donald Trump blanket immunity because it makes it seems to me now impossible for a trial to go forward.
I feel that as a president, you have to have immunity. Very simple.
For all practical purposes, today's decision almost certainly means that there are virtually no limits on what a president can do.
What's your thought? Do you think presidents should be immune from prosecution?
If a president can give himself that power, I think it could be abused.
I'm sure they're all doing a ton of illegal stuff all the time.
Who's above the law? I mean, as simple as that. No man is above the law. I don't care if you're a president, a king, or Indian chief.
Do you think the president should be immune from prosecution?
Nobody should be immune from prosecution. No matter if you're the leader of the free world or the second free world, it does not matter. We are not above the law. No one is.
All right, Paul, we will start with you. I want your reaction to the decision, first of all, and then maybe touch a little bit. I want both of you to touch on the dissenting opinion, the one by Sotomayor that talks about that no one is above the law. We heard from the general public, and that is kind of the general feeling that no one is above the law.
And historically, that's been true in this country, that even presidents are not above the law. So the idea that presidents have, but on the other hand, presidents have always had immunity for their official acts.
It's been understood.
It's been understood. I think that most people get that. So the Supreme Court saying that President Trump has immunity is not, that's not the radical part of the holding, I think, that disturbs a lot of people. Hmm. I think the Supreme Court went one step further and said, first of all, it's an issue of fact to decide for a judge whether something was an official act or not. And number two, if you cannot prosecute a president for a corrupt unofficial act by relying on his or her official act. So let me just give a practical example. Let's say somebody came to a president and said, I want to pay you $500,000 to pardon this person over here who is my relative. And the president took the $500,000 and issued the pardon. So if he was prosecuted for bribery, you could not, as a prosecutor, show you couldn't talk about the pardon itself because that's an official act.
It could be argued it was an official act.
That's right. So the Supreme Court has almost effectively made it impossible to prosecute a president, not to mention the fact that, just speaking as an attorney dealing with the practical realities of litigation, cases can take years. And so now, you know, it's going to be like a ping pong ball. If you're prosecuting a president, you better be darn sure that's going to go to the Supreme Court. But you got to start at the district court. So now the district court judge has to make findings of fact and get into the minutia of whether something was a official act or an unofficial act. Well, I want to appeal that now to the Court of Appeals. Okay, for then it goes to the Supreme Court. Then they could send it back. It literally could take a decade or more to prosecute a president.
I see that as where we're headed ultimately with these arguments back and forth. And Dr. O, isn't it true that presidential immunity, part of why it exists is so that we keep the president out of the courts while he's trying to serve and concentrate on keeping our country safe and handling matters?
Yeah, and that was certainly a huge part of the court's concern. We don't want presidents looking over their shoulder every time they make a tough decision. Will I be prosecuted or will I be sued? So the rules, it's been, you know, the Department of Justice has taken the view that while somebody's acting as president, we don't prosecute. Mm. We don't even indict. Can't have a cloud over the president.
Yeah.
Now the Supreme Court did say, and of course you can't be sued ever under a civil cause of action.
Okay.
You come out of office and somebody's unhappy and they think that you caused them damages. Well, the case arose. Somebody was fired from their job.
Right.
By
right.
the president.
Right.
Lost their job.
That
wanted
was the Nixon
be,
case you're,
yeah.
you're talking about? Yeah.
Wanted
yeah.
to be compensated.
Yeah.
And the court said, no, we're not going to let you sue ever. So for civil, never sue for official actions. Although if it's private, Clinton,
yeah,
right. Mm. Clinton was sued for private action.
Right.
While he
that was the
sued.
Paula Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But criminal, not while you're sitting. However, the assumption was that once you step down, then you would be at risk for criminal prosecution. Because after all, the impeachment clause says that if you're impeached, you still can be criminally prosecuted afterwards. And Nixon, after all, got a pardon when Nixon resigned before impeachment articles were voted on. He resigned. Gerald Ford pardoned him because President Ford assumed and former President Nixon both assumed Nixon could be prosecuted once he left office.
I want to jump into this dissenting opinion by Justice Sotomayor, because I think in my mind, I think it was pretty calculated that she used the term no one is above the law.
Yeah.
Technically, it's qualified immunity. It's not just the law as a whole. And I think that's where the general public gets confused. I think they have a perception. First of all, I don't think they understand immunity, legal immunity as a whole. I think much of the public has this idea of diplomatic immunity from movies and you know, a diplomat can come here and break whatever law they want and they're never going to be prosecuted because they have diplomatic immunity. But qualified immunity for a president, there's a lot of innuendo there. There's a lot of nuance there as well.
Yeah, and as Paul was saying, I mean, there's a couple steps here. Was it private or official action? When the president is trying to overturn an election, is that a campaign private action? Or as he claimed, well, as president, he has a duty to make sure elections are carried out fairly. So he was acting in an official capacity. So that's an important question.
Right.
And then...
And just breaking that down into practical reality, when Donald Trump was speaking to the crowd and the prosecutors want to say that was evidence of him inciting people to go to the Capitol. But at that moment in time, I mean, he was still technically president. And he would say, well, that's what a president does. You know, I was addressing the crowd. That was an official act. So we're into this murky gray area.
Right, right.
I feel sorry for the district court judge in D.C. because she's the one who's going to have to sort it out and make rulings. Yeah, this is official. That's unofficial. Yeah. And be the referee, so to speak. And then it'll work its way up the chain and eventually probably get back to the Supreme Court.
And then there's a second question. It's unless it's a core function, which we can talk about, but for most official actions, there's presumptive immunity. now. So then you have to, and what's the issue? Well, the court said, if being liable for criminal prosecution would unduly interfere, intrude on presidential decision making, right? We want them to act fearlessly. Again, not worry about, will they be hauled into court because they make a tough decision, and they have to make a lot of tough decisions. So the court said, we want presidents to act fearlessly. So then the prosecutor's gonna have to come in and say, yeah, but prosecuting President Trump because he incited a riot, that's not gonna cause future presidents to be worried when they have to make tough decisions, because no president should be out there inciting. But anyway,
but that's probably an argument that was presented, I would think.
Right.
You know, we don't want them tiptoeing around.
Right. Tiptoeing around. So the court's gonna have to sort through that. That could, you know, presumptions often can be tough to overcome. On the other hand, every criminal defendant who's convicted, there was a presumption of innocence, and prosecutors get over that. So a lot's gonna turn how courts interpret.
It's not black and white. I think there's going to be a lot of gray area, and it's going to come down to interpretation as well.
And another thing they did when they talked about core functions, of course, presidents, when they're acting in their core functions, have a defense. I have discretion here. But that used to be a defense. Okay, you have a case, and were they acting within their discretion or were they not? They've turned this into immunity, so you don't even get to the jury. The judge may just stop it and say this is close enough to their discretion that we're not even gonna.
Let me throw this idea out here, because I know there's been very passionate views on both sides. On the right, people say, well, you know, maybe they look at it. If you're a Donald Trump supporter, maybe you say this is a good decision. If you're on the left, you feel like, hey, this is the end of democracy as we know it. To what degree do you think maybe the Supreme Court was just making a really practical decision, somewhat rooted in politics? The country is so divided, and they don't want to be involved in this mess. And I feel like half the decision is almost kind of like, just, we're going to erect these barriers. This is something Congress should deal with. You can impeach a president, but we don't want to get into the middle of deciding whether green lighting a prosecution or not. Do you think that there's an aspect of this decision that was rooted in just the political realities, the divisiveness that's in play in our country right now?
Yeah, for sure. And especially how the timing of this. I think the biggest concern about the prosecution was the Justice Department of a sitting president running for re-election is. And now we're within 6 months of election day going after the presumptive nominee of the other party. There's a serious conflict of interest. Now, I think that can get you maybe temporary immunity, get past election day in November.
Yeah.
So they're not running. But I think that is, the optics, and just there's real appearance of impropriety when you're trying to prosecute the person who's trying to unseat you.
Yeah,
that's a
optics plays
issue.
A role no matter what you say, because there's the Supreme Court, but there's also this court of public opinion that can move the needle, if you will, where politics are concerned and where a lot of things are concerned.
Well, the reason I bring up politics is because it seems to me there's a conflict with the reasoning of the Supreme Court. On the one hand, they struck down the Chevron decision, which was really a landmark principle for many decades, that government agencies, which are part of the executive branch, that are all under the auspices of the president, are entitled some deference on issues. So, for example, whether it's the EPA or the FDA, that employs scientists, people with greater knowledge than a federal judge on issues, the courts would defer to them. The Supreme Court has struck that down, and now it's going to open it up to a lot more litigation, and you're going to have federal judges making decisions about very complex scientific things. So no deference to the executive branch there. But on the other hand, with respect to the presidential immunity decision, let's give deference to the president. He's entitled to absolute immunity. To me, that seems like those are two conflicting decisions.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, I want to talk about what this means for former President Trump. He's facing a number of legal challenges, and I think that this is, at the very least, potentially going to delay some of those cases. So we'll take a quick break here, but we'll be back with more of our discussion after this.
If you've been injured in an accident, you don't have to go it alone. At Paul Paddle Law, we understand your injuries aren't just physical. They also bring financial burden and emotional strain. At our firm, it's not just about legal representation. It's about genuine care and commitment. Lock in the attention you deserve from your attorney. We'll get you on the path to recovery. Call Paul Paddle Law. Legal security when you need it.
Welcome back, everyone. You're watching The Vegas Verdict, and this discussion that we're having today has to do with the recent Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity. Our guests, David Orenlicher and Paul Pata, want to get into what this means for former President Trump. We touched on it a little bit with respect to the attempt to overturn the election. That case potentially could be, at the very least, delayed. But I'm assuming that some of the arguments against him could also potentially be thrown out. Dr. O, let's start with you on this.
Oh yeah, he's already got a delay in his sentencing in the New York case for the payments to Stormy Daniels about their relationship, even though that's private, occurred before he became president, but they brought into evidence some things he did once he took office. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that's enough.
Could they throw it out, though?
No.
Could...
Oh, so they'll appeal on that.
Yeah.
I doubt they'll prevail on that, but gives them a ground for appeal. How important was that evidence?
Yeah.
So, but they've at least delayed the sentencing. And the others, though, overturning the election, the court specifically said that could be official.
What about the Florida case? Because classified documents.
The documents.
Donald Trump said, if I think about it, I can declassify it in my mind. Now we're getting into that again.
That gray area.
Is that an official act or not?
Well, and one definition is that it includes core constitutional powers. The word core is interesting to me. Would that qualify as a core constitutional power, or is that potentially gray?
I think we're somewhat in undecided territory. I don't know. I think, yeah. To be honest with you, I would defer to the professor.
Yeah. So the easy ones that, you go to Article 2, President's Commander in Chief. Mm. Okay. You can't go into court and say, the president should have sent us to the right rather than to the left, and we got massacred, and my kid died. Those kind of strategic decisions are up to the president.
Yeah.
The pardon power. The president pardons, no review. You can't go to court saying, I should have gotten a pardon.
Can't be challenged. That's clear.
That's clear.
Yeah.
Who the president nominates for the Supreme Court, right? Senate doesn't have to approve.
Irony of that one, but yes.
Yeah, so they're specifically stated. But the court then went another step and said, well, investigating and prosecuting is an executive for the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversations the president had with the Justice Department regarding the election counts as core conduct, because that's a quintessential presidential role.
Mm.
So, the court has a broader view than I think most people would. So things that shouldn't be core. Congress says to the president, regulate the environment, make sure our air and water are clean. That's something that Congress, that's not in the Constitution. Congress created that. So that will be official, but should not be core unless the court says, well, executing the law is a core presidential function.
Hmm.
So that I could see the court going either way on that.
Had the Supreme Court ruled the other way, what would we be looking at? We'd be looking at a situation where every president would be going back to try to prosecute the previous president. I mean, there'd be this long list of litigation, I'm assuming, right?
Well, I mean, it cuts both ways. You know, yeah. President Trump has made statements that referring to President Biden and the Biden crime family, and that there's going to have to be a reckoning, you know, later. Right. But this decision would shut that down, because effectively anything Joe Biden did in office that, you know, has inflamed people's passions on the other side would not be fair game. So I don't know. I think at this stage we have more questions than answers, quite frankly. If a president said, I'm going to nominate this person to be the U.S. attorney, the federal prosecutor in a district, and you call that person up and you say, but I'm giving you this job with the expectation that you're going to go after this guy who I don't like, that's an official act, because you're nominating a U.S. attorney. So I don't know where, we don't really know where the lines get drawn. That's part of the problem.
In the court of public opinion, do you think this is a win? I mean, I guess it falls on partisan lines and ideological lines, but I mean, is this a win in the public's eye? Or is this, have we taken a step back somehow?
I don't know. I think we have a 50-50 country. Some people might look at it, you know, a certain way through a political lens. Ultimately, I think the court could have been clearer in its directive. I feel like it left a lot of doors open, which is going to be a problem down the line.
There were strong dissenting opinions as well. Yeah, so it's kind of like, okay, this is the decision, but the dissent is pretty strong and
absolutely,
you know, as well. So it's,
and I think for a lot of people, regardless of where you are, the idea that a president is above the law, I think that idea, nobody's above the law, I think that resonates deeply.
Yeah.
So I think that, now one thing I think that will protect us, I think this makes it much harder to hold President Trump accountable. The odds of him being convicted have dropped for sure. Mm-hmm. That said, I'm not sure it will lead to more criminal misconduct in other administrations, because note that while President Trump, former president, maybe soon to be, will likely or more likely go free, his accomplices have not gone free.
Mm.
And for a president to do the kinds of things Trump did or President Nixon did when he was serving, he had to have his aides or his private attorneys or other people work with him. And those people will not be protected by immunity no matter how this comes out. And that's going to make it harder to do this kind of thing.
That, I think, actually is a great point.
Yeah,
I think that in order to really, I mean, it really only applies to the president. So like I gave that example of the U.S. attorney.
Right.
Well, the U.S. attorney could go to jail if he had a corrupt motive. If you're an underling and you work for the president and you carry out something illegal, you can go to jail and you can face prosecution.
Right.
So those people have to be willing to do that.
Very interesting. We'll take another pause here. When we come back, we'll have some closing thoughts, and ultimately we will hand down the Vegas verdict right after this.
Legal troubles require swift action, and there's only one attorney who's quick on his feet.
Legal troubles don't wait, and neither should you. I'm Tony Abbotangelo, a former judge with 30 years experience. I know the judicial system, and I know what will work for you in court.
When your circumstance requires a skilled negotiator who knows the law, tap into Tony. He's a former judge who can defend your rights. Call 707-7000.
All right, everyone, we are back with the Vegas verdict. Today we're talking about presidential immunity and the recent decision by the Supreme Court. We've covered a lot of ground here today. I'd love to get some closing thoughts. Dr. O, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, well, I will say, when you read the Court of Appeals decision, it was a 180-degree turn on what the lower court said, which I thought was well-reasoned. I thought most legal scholars did. But I think one of the other important concerns is the fact that the court is now comes out with these landmark decisions in a split, ideological split. When you go back to the Nixon case, when the court rejected privilege, in other words, he had to turn over the Watergate tapes and other documents so that prosecutors had access. The court was unified on that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think...
Does that lessen the significance because the court is split along ideological lines, even though it's technically landmark? They're all landmark on some level. Does it lessen the significance because of the makeup of the court?
Yeah, it undermines people's confidence in the court when they see them as politically driven. I want to say ideologically driven. I don't want to say they're
right.
Democrats
or partisan
or Republican.
Or what have you.
But
right.
Some of them have conservative leanings. Some of them have liberal leanings.
Right.
And these are decisions that need to be for the whole country.
Yeah.
And if they're only for conservatives or only for liberals, they don't serve the country well. And I think the court just... And that was just Chief Justice John Marshall. When he came on the court, he said, we need to decide cases unanimously so that they will have credibility and people will respect us.
Yeah, interesting. Paul, your closing thoughts on this?
We live in a divided country. It's unfortunate. I think, you know, there's a danger in that. This is a great country, 300 some million people. It's functioned amazing. It's been the greatest country, I think, ever in humankind.
Yeah.
But the country is so divided, and the judges on our courts are just the reflection of that. And the way I look at this decision, I just feel basically like they're really no different than the general public. You have judges leaning this way, and you have judges leaning that way. Mm. To me, the decision should be, for an average person should be able to read that and understand exactly what the test is.
Yeah.
But I feel like this decision leaves open more questions than provides answers.
My background is not law like you two. My background is in media. And I remember a time when you could turn on the evening news and you felt that it was objective, you felt that it was impartial. Now, it really doesn't matter which network you watch. There's always this perception that, oh, they lean this way, they lean this way, they lean this way. So your point that the country is divided isn't just touching our courts, it's touching media, it's touching every facet of life, I believe.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we like to close out this podcast by handing down a verdict, if you will. Our question today is, did the Supreme Court get it right with their decision about qualified immunity? So I will give us a countdown in 3, 2, 1. It's either yes or no. Did they get it right? Here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
No.
Yes. Okay.
No.
And Paul had a no as well. What happens on occasion, and actually I think this is also reflective, is that we get a hung jury, right? And the decisions are sort of split here today. And I don't, you know, I think that's reflective of society as well. You know,
yeah.
We talk about being divided. I think the decision was right because we need some kind of immunity. Otherwise, we're locked, you know. And you've got a president who's in court all the time instead of in the Oval Office. To your point that maybe there were parts that were left out or it wasn't clear enough, I would tend to agree with you there, because certainly the average person's not going to understand, you know, and I think it opens up all these gray areas that, Paul, you brought up as well. Mm-hmm. So. Gentlemen, thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gerard.
You've been watching The Vegas Verdict. Please join us online, vegasverdict.com. We are available on Spotify, Amazon, Apple Podcasts, and we also have a YouTube channel as well. We'd love to have your input and your thoughts. Perhaps one day you can even be a guest on The Vegas Verdict yourself. Thanks for watching.